Welcome to the Fuqua Show, for the stories, the lessons, and the passions of Team Fuqua. I'm your host, Thomas Cheng, and today I'm so thrilled to be here with my friend, Derek Haynes. How you doing, Derek?
I'm well, Thomas. What's up?
So Derek is a second-year MBA student at Fuqua. He grew up in Harlem and went to HBCU Morehouse College. Afterwards, he worked as a client manager at Goldman Sachs and then made a big pivot to teaching sixth grade math in Harlem, New York, in the school down the block from where he grew up. And he'll be going into private wealth management after graduation.
Sure. Yeah. Super excited. Outside Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Yeah. Beautiful.
So going from New York City down to the south in Atlanta, back up to New York to go to LA. So
you've been everywhere.
Been everywhere.
Came back from Spain too.
Yes. Barcelona. Stayed in the Gothic Quarter for about 3-4 months. Went to class at Asade. It was amazing.
What else do folks not know about you?
It's a few things. One, I'm a big listener of classical music. I prefer Johann Sebastian Bach to Mozart. Uh-huh. And then one of my 25 fun facts that we always have at Fuqua is I actually believe I inspired Steph Curry to start become a better three-point shooter.
Tell us more.
So in sixth grade, my AAU team, New York City Gauchos, played his team at an AAU tournament in Virginia Beach. And I remember him going up for a layup and me blocking the shot. And then I remember seeing very vividly his coach telling him, hey, there's a big man in the middle, shoot the three. And so from there, he lit us up. But I remember that very vividly.
All right. Well, I want to start with your background in Harlem. And you mentioned to me that your family has lived in that neighborhood for many, many years, many decades, in fact. Can you tell us about where you grew up and what your experience was like there?
Yeah, sure. So my family's been in Harlem for close, I would say, 60 to 70 years. We came up through the Great Migration from the South. My mother's parents are from South Carolina. And so in the time of the Great Migration, African-Americans in the South couldn't get any jobs. And so they headed north for a land of opportunity. And so we landed in Harlem and we've been there ever since. Harlem is such a beautiful place. I really enjoyed being there. It's like a beautiful Spike Lee movie where you can see kids playing outside. You hear the screams of the ice cream truck. You even hear the police sirens zooming through Lenox Ave. And it's such a wealth of community that really helped prepare me for my future.
And what are some of the other things about that neighborhood that really stick out to you in your memory?
Yeah, it was really a community base, right? And you just have a long legacy of, you know, everyone feels like a cousin. Everyone feels connected and related there. But what I would say is that what was really special about my upbringing is that I was really privileged to have both mom and dad in the house, right? My parents were very active in the community. My mother, again, lived in that neighborhood all her life. My dad was someone who was very active in Harlem. He was considered the neighborhood dad. He did all of the coaching for Little League and basketball and things like that. But also interesting about my dad, he's actually a corrections officer. So everyone knew my dad in some way, shape, or form, whether it was playing basketball or if any of the young people got in trouble and found themselves in a kind of a jam, my dad would be the one to kind of help guide them on that path and getting back to school and back on the right track.
And did you feel like there was a world out there that you wanted to see? Did you feel like Harlem was the world? What was your experience like there as a child?
So I think always knew that there was a world past 96th Street. Mm-hmm. So growing up in Harlem, you saw that there was a lot of community, a lot of love, but there was also a lot of situations where people were not able to get economic opportunities in Harlem. And so there was always like this view that you had to go downtown to work, right? You know, my mom, who was a career woman and worked for Columbia University for many years, who always had to leave her direct area to go and earn a salary and income. And so I knew that there was a world outside of Harlem that I would need to get access to build the wealth and the income needed to survive in America, right? And so I've always had my eyes and my visions on the bigger player and the bigger picture. Again, I have the spirit of my grandparents, you know, leaving from the rural South and going to New York City in search of opportunity. And that was really embedded inside me.
And is that how you ended up at Morehouse? Which, for those who don't know, is an HBCU or a historically Black college here in the U.S.
You know, it's funny. When you grow up in New York City, you have like this dead set view on you're going to live and die in New York City, and this is where you're going to be. And so the decision to go to Morehouse was actually one that I credit some of my close friends, specifically Donovan, who really was like, hey, man, it's this historically Black college. It's a great opportunity. You should go. And then I was like, OK, cool. Let me hear more about it. He said, it's all boys. I was like, Man, I'm like, so I went to a Catholic high school, which is all boys. So I was like, man, I'm not doing all boys again. So I kicked, I screamed, I fought. I applied to Morehouse College and Columbia University. Got waitlisted at Columbia, got into Morehouse. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, after senior week and graduating high school, almost like, quote unquote, running away from home. Mm-hmm. And then I remember my dad coming to get me and was like, hey, you're going to go to college.
Well, I wanted to ask you about your experience just being a college student there.
Yeah.
For listeners who might not know what it's like to be at that kind of environment, if they might not be Black themselves, what was that like for you being in that space?
I think what's special about Morehouse for me is that I grew up in Harlem, and the idea of Harlem was one that had a balance, right? I was probably a part of the group of people that were growing up at a time right before the empowerment zone became more active. And so gentrification started to occur. But prior to me, you know, Harlem was wrecked, very similar to the opioid crisis, to the crack cocaine epidemic. And so my family, because of that, we really were really close-knit, tight, and really protective of ourselves, right? But even through that protection, you cannot prevent like some of the violence and the things that occur. So it made me believe that I had to be all alone in my journey of academic pursuits. And then when I got to Morehouse, I met so many men who had the same ambitious goals as me. I think they say Morehouse literally goes around to schools across the nation and takes, you know, the top performing African-American students and bring them all in a pot and then melts us all together and really creates a rich environment of diversity where you remove the focus on race and gender. And now you have the chance to have men having conversations about who they are and what they believe in.
Hmm.
And also Morehouse gave me a lot of confidence to know that I belong. So I don't think I've ever experienced imposter syndrome because I've always knew someone at Morehouse that climbed a mountain that I'm looking to put myself at task to. So for example, when I started working in investment banking at SunTrust, and I met people on the trading floor, I knew someone in investment banking that went to Morehouse that was a VP and managing director. So I always had like this wealth of networks of people who like were ahead of me, but also being that bridge builder for me to cross right behind them.
Well, after Morehouse, you went into banking.
Yes, I did. So I graduated Morehouse College and I went into investment banking at SunTrust Robinson Humphrey. There I was on a fixed income syndicate team and I learned a lot about the business there.
What were some of the biggest challenges for you during this time?
Sure. So you remove the imposter syndrome because I knew I belonged.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say like the two things that I had trouble with was that when you're an analyst or an associate on a team, the focus is process and not necessarily the output, because you're one cog in this larger machine. And there's an expectation that you will follow the process so that everyone can stay on beat. This was very different than my experience at Morehouse, where we were just focused on getting things done. So for example, like I remember very vividly us, you know, going over to Georgia Tech campus because they had a textbook that we needed, and us propping open the door and someone going in and reading and making copies and, you know, kicking it, like very scrappy, right? So you take all that Harlem mentality and the Morehouse pedigree and you made a real scrappy person. And so that's how I kind of approached much of my time as an analyst and associate. But that really wasn't the most effective way to work within the team. And, you know, giving people updates and keeping people aware of what your projects are was very challenging for me. And then I also view like asking for help in a corporate environment was a sign of weakness, but I like really learned how to grow out of that.
So how'd you end up back in New York?
Yeah, well, so to give a little bit of insight there, so it was 3 years into my job at SunTrust Robinson Humphrey, and then I got, you know, hit with a call that made an impact. My grandmother was terminally ill, and was really worried about her, and I wanted to care for her, but more importantly, she had three adopted children that she was caring for, and because of her diagnosis, they were going to separate the three children. So I decided to make a career pivot, leave investment banking, and go up to in New York City and then try my career out in asset management. This made it possible for me to, one, spend my time with my grandmother, make sure that the three children stay together in the same home. You know, they all raised together. But also it gave me a chance to break into Wall Street as well. So for the first year after she passed, I was primary caregiver for the children. Then in year two, my rest of my family helped stepped in and I was able to reactivate my career. And that's when I started at Paradigm Asset Management, ran by a Morehouse grad.
Mm-hmm.
And then after working there for about a year or so, I moved over to Goldman Sachs.
I want to ask you, you made a big career pivot.
Sure.
So after, I don't even know how many years of banking there was, after 7 years of banking, you decided, I'm going to go back up to Harlem, back to my neighborhood where I grew up and teach sixth grade math.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Man, Thomas, so like one thing for me, again, family focused and really driven to make the best out of opportunity for my family. And so I made it proverbially to the top, right? Like I'm at Goldman Sachs, I'm earning hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? Like I'm having a great time, like I got money, the world's my oyster. And then out of nowhere, one day I was up at the firm, I got a call that one of my best friends, Kevin, was murdered. So Kevin was an amazing guy. He did everything that I did. He, quote unquote, did everything right, was a CPA working at KPMG. But, you know, honestly, he was at the wrong place at the wrong time. He was around a group of guys that weren't in a positive, correct, creative or constructive situation, and he was murdered. And that really stunned me. That stunned me a lot because I grew up in a space where I've had multiple people close to me murdered throughout my life. I think about as early as eighth or ninth grade, my close friend Dee Dee was murdered. I think about in my first year at Morehouse College, my cousin Rory was murdered. And in each of those times, I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to find a way to go to where the problem was and make it right. And so I was sitting there and I was thinking to myself over a course of 2-3 weeks, all right, this job at Goldman Sachs is great, but what good is it to gain the world and lose my people as far as like my people in Harlem? And so I decided to find a way to make an impact. I knew business school was an option and I can always reset my career, but I decided to go back to my neighborhood and help out. And so what I said was, when should I start? I was like, high school is maybe too late for me. Small one, first, second, third grade is too young. I said, I knew the perfect grade, sixth grade. I was like, sixth grade is where like that turning point happened for most people mm-hmm. in their life, man. It's an interesting time. The boys are short, the girls are tall. you're forming your crew. You're still like, you still want to play with the Care Bear and the Ken doll and the Barbies and the Tonka trucks, but also you want to like listen to hip hop music and have a little bit of fun. And so I found that like, that was where I needed to go. And so I said, hey, let me go as fast as I can to that space. And I was hired within 6 months. So I did like a sort of like an MBA approach to it. I started volunteering. I started asking for leadership roles in the local Boys and Girls Club. I started doing like extra work on the weekends. I created like a math program. And then sooner or later, some parents were like, hey, there's an opening at my kid's school. Would love for you to come over and be a teacher. And sure enough, one of my friends was a person in HR there and they made the connection. And I ended up working for Puff Daddy at Capital Prep Charter School.
Was it an easy decision or a hard decision?
It was easy for how I felt at the time. It was very easy for how I felt at the time because the money wasn't necessarily the trapping for me because it wasn't everything. And I knew I can always get it back. The hardest part was knowing like how hard I worked to get to this point where I was like at that associate level, VP level, like making that transition at Goldman Sachs and knowing what that was going to mean for me. But what made it like a lot more easier is like when I had my first day there at the charter school and it just like all connected and clicked for me.
What was hardest there at the school?
The school? You know, the hardest part, Thomas, man, and you'd be surprised. This is actually two parts. I would say the first part was like the engagement with the curriculum. It's hard, right? Because you're this banker teaching math, so you're putting everything in stocks and bonds and stuff. And it's like, no.
Well, what kind of math were you teaching?
Oh, sixth grade math. So I was teaching basic arithmetic. Sixth grade math is a story of proportions.
Okay.
So it's basically a lot of like GMAT math stuff. So it wasn't too hard to make that adjustment. But it was like fitting the curriculum in time for what it was that they needed to learn, right? And making sure that when the bell rung, I was done with the lesson. I think I struggled with that for the first 2 years. And a lot of people told me around year 3 or 4, that's when you get better at it. Mm-hmm. And then also giving too much. I think managing how much I was going to give of myself. I saw that I was giving so much to the after the class that it was starting to burn me out on both ends, right? Because I was driven by passion to do this. And so what I took away from that is learning how to manage that. I heard a saying, you fill your cup and then the overflow is for your community. And so I was giving everything to my community. I was the math teacher. I was like the gym assistant. I managed the cafeteria. And then on the weekends, I would go to everybody's basketball game, the cheerleading practice. And they're like, oh, Mr. Haynes going to come. And so I would go. And so I just would be burnt out more than I was in banking. Mm. And so those were like the two balances, like managing the time of the education process. And then also understanding, like, even though these kids are cute and cuddly and beautiful and young, beautiful minds and everything, you got to know how to manage your time and your space because you're only one person.
And did you feel like you were able to have the impact in the community that you were hoping for?
Absolutely, man. I mean, when I walk into a room, I let it be known I'm there, man. And so what's really cool about it is that since I taught in Harlem, I knew all of the kids in some way, shape, or form, like the blocks and neighborhoods that they grew up in. And even more funny, I had three students whose parents were peers that I grew up with. But what was really cool about it, and I think that education system should think about this, of like bringing people from the community into the classroom, because it really allowed me to have like that level of engagement with students that other people couldn't have, right? I was able to give students certain looks and they would just sit down. Or I was able to come over and say, well, you know, if I call James, and they like, and everybody at the table like, who's James? He's like, talking about my dad. They're like, yeah, we know. And so I was able to make that impact. And a lot of those students went on to go to great high schools. And also, I think we have one that's getting prepared for college. So it was great.
What I'm hearing is the importance of community, not only for you and for the students, for really anyone, whether it's the community in Harlem, mm-hmm. your community at Morehouse. No one person can achieve this kind of success by themselves.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, before at all, I give thanks to my partner, Alexis, right? Because she was corporate executive while I was teaching. So she was able to financially mm-hmm. help us out in our home. We just bought a home in Harlem. So that was really thankful for that, for her love, care, support, and even financially, monetarily. But also just like community, right? So like I taught during the pandemic, right? So
tell
like,
us about that.
Yeah. So Thomas, I'm on Zoom, right? Mm-hmm. And it was funny, right? During the global pandemic, it was hard to get kids on Zoom. Mm-hmm. But once you got them on Zoom, they never wanted to get off. We would have class, and then at the end of the class, you know, you have that awkward pause at the end of the Zoom, and it's like, okay, who's gonna sign off first?
Right.
They would just
wave.
Yeah, they would just stay on, like, okay, Ms. Davis, what's next? Yeah. Then they would like show me how to do screen shares. And then we would play games like Among Us and a lot of different things. I felt that during the pandemic, it wasn't that the academics were taking a step back. It just wasn't gonna be the priority of what I was doing with the students I was working with. What I wanted to do was give them an opportunity to have that connection even through the Zoom screen. So at times I would have close to 100 students on Zoom and we'd be playing like a game like Kahoot or any of the EdTech games. And they were learning, but more so important, they knew that somebody cared on the other side when their parents weren't there. Because to be frank, a lot of my students grew up in Harlem. A lot of their parents were frontline workers, as we all know. During the pandemic, frontline workers still had to work. And so who was going to care for their children? And so I felt really blessed to be a part of that. I remember very vividly my girlfriend like waking up, because she would wake up at 9. I'll be up at 7. She's like, man, if I hear this Capital Prep slogan one more time. But that's how I was really dedicated to my students.
And I'm so impressed because teaching in Harlem, I imagine, is difficult and has challenges. You're teaching during the global pandemic on Zoom. Everybody's going through all sorts of things.
Yeah.
How did you maintain that optimism and that positive energy?
I think I'm just, like people say, I get excited to just drink water, right? Like, I'm a very excited guy. I'm a very upbeat guy. I think being upbeat wasn't the challenge. I think the management of my energy and effort, right? And again, it burns you out, like, because students, the same screen that they use for class is the same screen they use to play Fortnite, right? Mm-hmm. So for them, it doesn't necessarily go off, right? So when they're playing Fortnite and their parent may ask them, how's homework going? They felt comfortable emailing me at like 2 a.m, like, hey, Mr. Haynes, having trouble with this problem. And because, you know, I was dedicated, the phone would be on, it would go off and I would answer, right? And so just learning how to manage that was like probably the biggest adjustment and the biggest challenge that I had.
How'd you end up coming back to business school, being here at Fuqua in North Carolina?
Yeah, so it's funny, right? So like, let's bring it all the way back. So I'm in Fast Track. I am 12 or 14. And I meet these women who are mentors at Fast Track and they are executives. I meet Linda Jordan and Casey Copeland. And little do I know, I fast forward to me applying to business school. They're Fuqua grads. Mm-hmm. And so I applied to business school. And when I asked them to write the recommendation and they saw it was Fuqua, they were like, oh, did you know that I also went to So I've been just supported by people like that in my life. And so when I applied to business school, I got into Duke, and it was the choice that was perfect for me and my family.
Gotcha. Private wealth management. That's your summer internship and the job you'll be going into.
Yeah. Derek, the teacher, is more built on like the spirit of who I am and the love of education, the thirst of knowledge. But I really enjoy putting together portfolios and talking to people about investment plans and thinking about the long-term horizon. So I'm going to JP Morgan's private bank, and I'm going to be there in Los Angeles. Super excited about the opportunity. I feel like the role really fits who I am from even just the interview. I keep a Wall Street Journal with me, and literally in the interview, the senior banker is like, okay, you got the paper. What's a good story? And so we start going through a story, and he's like, how does this impact, you know, taxes? How does this impact a bond allocation? How does this impact your equity allocation? How does this impact estate planning? And we're just going through it. And he's like, man, like, that's the job, bro. If you can do that, then you can do the job. And so it was really exciting for that, not necessarily needing that validation, but it felt like one of the biggest challenges I had in banking is that I took any job to be in banking where I wasn't focused on the role of what the banking job was.
I see.
And so that really helped me out to go through the interview and enjoy the whole process.
What a life and what a career and everything that you've lived through and everything that you've accomplished.
Very blessed for it, Thomas.
You've shared a little bit about what mm-hmm. is next for you, but if you had to reflect back on everything so far, especially for folks listening, whether it's people in your community, former students,
sure.
any big pieces of advice?
I think the number one thing as far as like MBA experience is love the seat that you're in. Sometimes we get so bogged down looking forward. It's like, hey, I'm going to do this job for 2 years, and that's going to set me up for year three. I mean, if you talk to most people in elevated senior roles, they usually get there by chance. Mm. So architect like the role today and not the role that's going to be 7 years from now, because 7 years from now, the whole world could change. So love the job that you're in. Love the skin that you're in. Love the situation that you're in. Like be in the now, be in the present, enjoy where you are at that moment in time. Be where your feet are. And I would think that that's probably like my life lesson across everything. You know, when I think about my grandparents and everybody else that came before me, they always tell me about just loving the moment.
Any messages you want to leave to your fellow bankers?
Fellow bankers, I would say always have something to talk about. Have a view of the market. And it doesn't have to be something so elevated where that you feel like you're an expert at it. I think like three levels of it. I would say the three levels that I always take is that I first read about it in a Wall Street Journal. Next, I do a little bit of Google searching on it for like 15, 20 minutes to read another article from another place. And the third is listen to a podcast. And I think those three touches of information makes it possible for you to have an educated conversation about anything.
How about messages for your fellow teachers?
Fellow teachers, oh man, I would say again, understand that you're going to have a greater impact on these lives than you would ever imagine. I still remember my third grade teacher, Ms. Bryant. I still remember my third grade assistant teacher, Mr. Young. And they still have had the most impact on me than anybody else, than any book by Benjamin Graham I've read. You know, understand you're having a large impact, and that don't focus so much on the X's and O's. Focus on the classroom management. Make sure you create a protective environment, an inclusive environment. Try to watch out for the bullying. And those are the things for teachers. I think the X's and O's will come with students as they spend more time in the work outside of the classroom.
And last but not least, how about any messages for your former students?
Love the skin that you're in, man. I tell them that all the time. My family always told me to love who I am and what I've accomplished. And then so I always try to tell them to love the skin that you're in. Like I have students that reach out to me all the time. They say, Mr. Haynes, you're wacky. I would do all types of stuff. I would yell, scream, stomp, jump. And they're like, we don't do this all in other classes. But I'm like, yo, that's just me. And that's just who I brought to the table. So again, I would say to my students, to my classmates here at Fuqua, love the skin that you're in and know that you are special, you are unique. And just like the stars in the galaxy, it's only one of you.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Derek. I can't wait to see what lies ahead for you. Thanks so much for coming in today.
No doubt, Thomas. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks.